So then maybe if there's any questions on anything more specific. You had a question.
Would you mind elaborating on Manas Puja?
Manasa Puja, but what do you mean by elaboration? Means elaboration means you're going to go through the, you're going to worship with 16 items. So you're going to go through those 16 items in your mind, what you would be doing. Like that. Okay? But it has to fit within the time frame. Maybe, like that. Yes?
I had a question, just going back a little bit. You said seeing and performing is, you get the same benefit and consciousness depends on your own. What if you're seeing somebody perform an artisan and you know that they're not doing it correctly, but they're doing, you can tell that they're doing it with as much love and devotion as they can. Does that affect your consciousness if you're looking at them and saying,
I mean, it will to some degree, but then afterwards, means if the person is performing the artik, you're watching, they're not doing it nicely, then after the artik, you explain to them, you know, properly how to do it, then you won't have the problem again, like that. But otherwise, you just move somewhere else where you can't see the pujari. You know what I'm saying? You know. Is that okay? Yeah. Okay. Yes.
I wanted to, we were discussing about om worshipping, and in that regards, I wanted to ask, what is the difference between if you have any home installed deities versus non-installed deities?
Installed or non-installed?
Right. So, is there any?
Is there any difference?
Significance about, or once you have installed, it's okay not to have installed.
Traditionally you have installed, permanently installed, and temporarily installed. So personally I don't know about uninstalled. Like that. I'm not exactly sure how that got established. Because there's this idea of it's not installed, you don't really have to take care of it. You know, it's kind of like your wife, you have to take care of. If you have a girlfriend, you just keep her in a closet, and whenever you want, you pull her out and take her out to dinner, and when you're not interested, you keep her back in the closet, you know. You know what I'm saying? So, if, you know, it's hilarious, but you're applying the same thing to the deity, so. From what it means, like we used to have, there was a set of deities, Gornitai deities in Mayapur. They would stay in a trunk in Prabhupada's room. And whenever there was some big festival or some program, generally outside preaching program, then they would come out of the box and then they would be at that program. But when they were there, they would be worshipped, you know, properly like regular deities with second initiated devotees. And then when that program was finished, they go back in the box. You know, it's like the Shaligram. You take him out, you do your worship. When he's finished, you put him back to sleep. You know, so as the Prabhupada was laughing one day and talking about Shaligram worship, he says, mantra sleeping, you know, like that. So that's the idea, is that you might have a set of deities, like let's say you have a temple, you don't have Radha Krishna deities. So then for Janmashtami, you have a set of deities, they sleep all year, and on Janmashtami, you wake them up, bathe them, do all the pujas and everything nicely for that day, and then that night, then there's the Abhishek, and then the next day you put them back to sleep. And then you wake them up again next year. So that kind of thing you can do. You know, so they're temporarily installed. There's no formal installation of that, but when you're worshipping the deity, then the full rules apply. Like that. So that's why normally then if either you don't have the facility or don't have the qualifications, then one worships pictures and stuff like that. You know, that's pretty standard. Like that. Generally, there's this idea that, oh, if we install big deities in the temple or people have deities, they'll be more inspired. No, an inspired person worships deities. Not having the deities, then people get inspired, right? We have deities here. Where's the inspiration? You know what I'm saying? So, the inspired people do worship. So, that's done through preaching, through association, through that kind of a thing. So somehow or another, then it's just become very popular. Everyone has to have deities. Everyone has to have Radha Krishna deities. You know, like this. It's like, you know, like that. I don't have much more to say than that. You know? The point is if they're installed, then there must be a standard that's maintained. You know what I'm saying? Because the point is Krishna's form is non-different from him. So if you have it, then otherwise, what's the meaning of worshipping if Krishna's not there? You know? So if he's there, then you have to follow standards. It's not that well, because he's not installed, I don't really have to follow any standards, because it's still him. Right? Even if one says uninstalled deity, it's still, what's the meaning if it's uninstalled and Krishna's not there while you're worshipping? So if he's uninstalled but Krishna's there, then still some standard must be there. You know, because in the home, whatever it is that you can establish, that you can maintain, then that's what you should be doing. You know what I'm saying? So it should be set simple enough that you can always maintain it. You know what I'm saying? But at the same time, it's elaborate enough that it actually engages you. You know what I'm saying? It's not that every day I'll offer Krishna one peanut, right? You know, and that, and I will, you know, Prabhupada mentions that nectar devotion, and I will then, you know, eat very elaborate food and all that. No. Point is if you have a very sophisticated lifestyle, then naturally your deity worship will be more. You have a simpler, it will be more simple. That's the advantage in the home worship is you can make adjustments for your facility. But the point is it's still Krishna, so you can't neglect. You can't just, oh, it's not installed, so if we don't do the puja today, it doesn't matter. And no, like that. Is that whatever you're going to do, it should be regular. Right? Does that make sense?
Yes.
Like that. So that's the consideration, is that you're dealing with Krishna. So then deal in a way that will actually be progressive. You know, he'll be pleased, you'll be engaged, and then it's nice. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Okay. 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 Yes.
Can I ask you?
Yeah.
Say that if you have sets of deities, and you also
have sets of deities,
you have Radha Krishna, you have Gaudiya, and if you also have Shalinam Shila, and you worship, if you bathe Shalinam Shila every day, that means you're worshipping Shri Radha Krishna. Is that? It's like
specifically Radha and Krishna. Gornitai doesn't
and
get worship. Okay. What if there's Jagannath, Baladev, Subhadra? They get worship, they don't get worship. And if Nishingadev is there? What about if it's Baladev, Subhadra, and Jagannath and Gornitai, but no Radha Krishna, then?
Someone was just explaining that if you have sets of deities and if you have Shila, if you worship Shila.
The Shila then takes all the technical worship that would be done for the main deity is done for the Shaligram. So that means technically if you have the main deities, they don't have to be bathed. But that doesn't mean that they're not undressed, wiped off with a damp cloth, dried, and then redressed. It just means you don't have to do the full bath, because when you have the big deities, you can't do that. So therefore, the Shaligram, then, the worship is done, then that's done for all the deities. That's why in the big temples, they always have a Shaligram. So all the technical puja they would want to offer to the main deity is done for Shaligram. So it means it would be technically like he's an Utsav Murti, you know, like that. So then all the different functions, like the big deity you can't put to bed, but the Shaligram you could put into bed. He can be bathed, he can be, you know, so any kind of special things that you want to do is done for him. Right? But that doesn't mean that one neglects the big deity. One doesn't have to change his clothes or wipe him off or do anything like that. Is that okay? Yeah. Yes.
You mentioned that tithe, punctuality, and cleanliness is important. How to make devotees understand who are in worshiping deities, pujaris, let's say cooks, to cook on the time and bring on the time, or pujaris to, what you said, preliminary preparation and conclusion and finishing everything with cleaning everything after it. how to make devotees understand how is this important that Krishna accept? It's offering to Krishna.
Yeah, it means you explain it to them, and if they understand, then nice, and if not, then you stand there. And while they're cooking, you make them nice and uncomfortable by saying, 20 more minutes. And then come back after 5 minutes, 15 more minutes. It works. Because they'd rather cook on time and have you not there than have you coming and harassing them. I did that once. We had to in Mauritius. The Prime Minister was coming to the temple. They had 20 minutes to dress full-size Radha Krishna deities. They did it in time because he just sat there. And you know, but there I didn't work on 5 minutes. I work on, you know, 1 minute, 2 minute. You know. They got it done. Like that. Because people don't like others always telling them what to do. They'd rather do it themselves. So if they know that you're going to make their life pleasantly uncomfortable, you know, then things start happening on time. Like that. Right. Yes.
Offered
to the deity. So, but the point is Krishna likes it on time and they don't want to do it on time, so how is that good consciousness? You know what I'm saying? And the point is you're telling them something that they're actually supposed to do for Krishna, so if they're getting bent out of shape, that's their problem. It's not your problem. Does that make sense? I mean, if you can... Best is that everybody hears that everything should be on time, and so therefore they'll make that endeavor. I'm talking for those that even despite that still, either they're so spaced out, then they don't feel bad, or the ones that just have attitude, but then you just show more than what they got. You know what I'm saying? Because the ones that are spaced out, and okay, because for them it's like, you know, 5 minutes, you know, what they think is 5 minutes is half an hour. It's not that they're just not aware, so when you make it aware, you know, you can, you know what I'm saying? In other words, it's something that's used temporarily to get something done, and then that's it. It's not a standard. You know, it's not like, you know, sitting around in the Bhagavatam class, you got a squirt gun, and anytime someone nods out, you squirt, you know, shoot, you know, these kind of things. It's not something that's permanent. You know, it's used to get an effect, and if it doesn't get an effect, then you have to try something else. If you have to regularly use it, it means still something's wrong. You know, so his point is if they're always half an hour late, then they should start half an hour earlier. Does that make sense? You know, in other words, that's all the quicker they can cook, then start earlier. Like that. But the point is the offerings and things should be on time. Like that. Is that okay? Okay. It's sometimes a little painful being, you know, nudged from the mode of ignorance, you know, up to a higher mode, you know, so... like that, but it has to be done. You know, as pleasant as possible, you can do it, you know. You can come in and say, 5 more minutes, you know, like that, whatever it is, you know, so then, you know, they can't get too upset, then, you know, it's just, you know. Another kid? Okay.
More simple, killing a brahmana.
I'm not sure about brahmana. I heard your mother and father.
Oh, okay. The
like, you know, if you have something that was like a codicil, but then you're eating, it was prasadam, that prasadam, how is it simple to eat prasadam?
Kadasi is the mother devotion. There's one story that there's the Papa Purush. He's this little guy about this big. He sits right here. And his body is made up of all the sins personified. You know, like that. Like his nose is killing a Brahmin. You know, like this. It's all the whatever there are. So then, when people are sinful, he becomes prosperous. And when people are not, then, you know, his health isn't so great. So, at one point, people were becoming, you know, just by the effect of time, becoming very sinful. So then he was becoming very, very, you know, happy, very fat, and, you know, everything. He was good health, right? So then from this, then all the hellish planets are just filling up with living entities and all that, and they're all, you know, in anxiety because it's not exactly, you know, it's not exactly what you call 5-star arrangements, you know. So then I think someone went to the Lord and said what to do, because it was so loud, because everybody basically was in hell. So then, you know, how to deal with this. So then Krishna said, okay, so then whoever follows the codicil, then they'll be freed from this. Right? They'll go back to Godhead. So then, you know, it was announced, and so everybody started following a codicil in hell. Right? And so then everybody's leaving, going back to Godhead. And so then Papa Purusha is getting very, very skinny again. And then so he went to Vishnu and said, well, you're the Lord of creation, so you protect everybody. So I'm also part of the creation, so you please also protect me. You know, so then Krishna said, all right, so anyone who eats grains on a codicil, then they'll be under his control. Does that make sense?
Well, how can he, so he also is residing in the grains of an authentic...
Means on a codicil, he can reside in grains. You know, it's not that the prasad becomes sinful. It means that he's there. It's just like you have prasad and some flies sit on top. You know, it's not that the prasad is contaminated. It just means there's flies there. So he enters the grains. So then on that day is that you'll get the benefit of having taken prasad, but you'll also take on the sins. You know, it's just like you have prasad and we put poison in it. You get the benefit of taking prasad, but it also you get the poisonous effect.
And then sometimes we distribute prasadam with grains, you know, to maybe like to the public.
Better they're taking prasad than not taking prasad, because they'll probably eat grains anyway. But if you could distribute things that are also non-grains, then, you know, then that's a benefit. Because the point is they're not going to be specifically following a codicil anyway. Mm-hmm. So for them, the benefit that they'll get from taking prasad is the point. You know, it's not that you go out and distribute, you know, non-grain things, and then the rest of the day, or before that, after that, they're not going to take grains, right? They're going to, you know, you distribute something, they're going to eat it, and then, oh, hey, let's go out to the rest. Oh, we can't go there because today's a codicil. We didn't take grains today. You know, so it's not going to happen. So for them, it technically doesn't really matter. You know what I'm saying? If someone's staying in the temple and all they're going to eat is your food, then you feed them akadasi food and explain to them what's happening and the vrata and all that. And plus the akadasi prasad is always very nice, so they won't have any problem. Because they technically don't know that, you know, necessarily the... It's not that you... It means an American diet doesn't necessarily mean that you have to eat grains. I mean, like a kid could eat, you know, how you say... drink his milk in the morning and then eat ice cream and then eat, you know, eat some French fries, and, you know, could go the whole day and follow a codicil without planning it. You know, so it's not necessarily that it's, you know, it's not like cultures where they have to have their bread or their rice or, you know, stuff like that, otherwise it's not a meal. So then, you know, it wouldn't matter there, but if it's just general to the public and they don't know, then it doesn't really matter. Does that make sense?
so does the spiritual master take on reactions if the disciple breaks a codicil?
Point is, it means if someone's initiated, then means reactions then go that direction, yes. You know what I'm saying? So if it's one thing you don't know, it happened by accident, you know, that's another thing. But if it's just you don't care, then definitely there's going to be some reaction. Because the idea is the spiritual master is vouching for someone that they're qualified, and when they act in a way that's not qualified, then naturally he'll get the reaction.
Is there like a tapasya to perform like this?
It means like standing on your toes or something. Or
well, like my
chanting the whole Bhagavad Gita backwards.
He used to tell me to follow a tapasya another day, but then he said, oh, well, actually just go and see the
chant. The normal thing is you just follow it the next day. Means that the rest of that day you don't eat grains. It's not, oh, I've already eaten, so I just know. You just don't eat, and then the next day you follow it properly. Like that. Does that make sense? Okay. Yeah.
What happens sometimes you make guests? And guest is not doing Ekadasi. So is it alright to feed them what they want to eat and that you do the Ekadasi?
Depends what kind of guests they are.
It could be anyone from relatives, from friends, neighbors.
Yeah, so there's a difference between neighbors and friends and relatives.
Right, relatives you can explain. And
yeah, like that. Like that.
And when you are supposed not able to explain, so like, you said
Atithi,
you have to take care of
Atithi. Yeah, but that you have to see, but why is the Atithi at your house? You know what I'm saying? They know you, they know your culture. So you can explain, and if they are comfortable with that, then you can say that today we don't take grains and all that, so, you know, do you want to follow that with, like, what we're doing, or would you rather have this, you know, and then work it out. But go ahead. But if you're doing for relatives, then they want to eat their grains and make the grains and cook for them and do whatever you want. But let them eat on their own. And then when they've finished and everything, then you eat with your family. But they shouldn't say, no, we want to eat with you. Just tell them, forget it. It's a codicil. You want to eat the grains, you eat on your own. You want to eat the codicil, then you eat with us. Like that. Because we'll feed you like that because you're a guest, not because you're family. Like that. Nick Chandling gets the point across.
One more question on Ekadasi. By mistake, you know that Ekadasi is there, but sometimes you forget. You shouldn't wake up in the morning or something. By mistake, you just put something in mouth. So what one should do? Follow the remaining day of the Ekadasi?
Yes.
Okay.
Because in any case, just because you're going to follow it another day doesn't mean Papa Purusha is not there. It's his day. Okay. You know, and he's not going to go away just because you made a mistake, you know. The more mistakes you make, the happier he is. So he's definitely going to stick around.
Okay.
Like that. Yes.
How important is to observe the time the break Ekadasi fast?
How important is it to follow the time? Generally, it's just that's the way it's done, because the Ekadasi, you know, generally would finish by sunrise. And within the first quarter of the day, then you would break the fast. So basically between sunrise and the first quarter, you know. So it's like sun comes up at 6 and by 9 o'clock. So only sometimes you see the parans will be longer because the Ekadasi Tithi runs over into the Dwadasi. All right, so then it says, you know, from 7:45 till 9 o'clock. That means it's Ekadasi until 7:45. That's right. Otherwise, it'll take from sunrise until that quarter. So that's why some of them you'll see it'll be, you know, 5:05 until 9:10 because it's the Ekadasi is already finished. You know, that's just otherwise it gives a form. Otherwise, what is your reason for breaking it later? You know what I'm saying? ideas. Here's a form, you know, this is the rule, this is the way, the tradition. So I use that, then it connects it. Otherwise, how do you connect it? Just, you don't like, you'd rather eat later. So the point is, you only have to take one grain. You don't have to eat a whole meal. Yeah. So is that okay? Yeah, fine.
I've heard that it's not really good for a pregnant woman or for a new mother to follow the policy.
Why would it be a problem? Since when does grains make it all happen? I've never heard that.
I've had so many Indian women tell me.
But from which what community?
When Phoenix, I was there.
No, but that's Phoenix. I'm talking about.
There's like a large Indian.
But I'm just saying, what community? Community means, are they Gujarati, are they Rajasthani, are they Sindhis?
Gujaratis.
Yeah. I've never heard it.
And they've always told me, like, every time they've seen me calling in Gujarati, they're like, you shouldn't do that, it's really bad for you, you're pregnant, and then you're a new mother.
But maybe because the way they do it, maybe they do it a different way. But I mean, what we eat nice food, so what's the problem? You know what I'm saying? Because I've never heard that before. I've never heard that any community ever even says that. I mean, if they were Sindhi, I'd understand. Like that, you know, like that. But if they're not Sindhi, it doesn't make sense to me.
Or if it was Nirjala Ekadasi.
Nirjala Ekadasi, that's another thing. That I wouldn't bother with.
I mean, you would say it on any...
This, they just want to be special, that's all. But I'm pregnant, so therefore the whole world goes around me. But I've never, you know what I'm saying? I've never heard it from any family tradition anywhere in the last 35 years of being in India.
But what if you have like some sort of medical condition where you have a doctor saying that it's not healthy for you to...
It means your health will only be maintained if you eat some bread. You know what I'm saying? What is it that is the problem with Ekadasi? You can eat as many times as you want, how much you want, whenever you want.
Well, when I was in Phoenix, because I had heard it so much that it was unhealthy, and then even my doctor, while I was praying with my third son, she would say, yeah, it isn't a good idea because you're probably not getting all the nutrients that you need for the baby, blah, blah, blah.
And so, did you ask him if it was all right to not eat meat?
Right, I did. They knew I was.
You know what I'm saying? Because according to them, unless you ate meat, then you wouldn't really get the nutrition you need.
So, but what I would do is I would follow half day. Is that
half day means?
Up until maybe about 1 o'clock, and they would start the problem. And I would take, I know it's like the amount that you take is. Doesn't make a difference whether
you take smaller amounts. No, but the thing is I've never heard of this. So this is made up by some ladies in Phoenix. Remember, they are in Phoenix. The people who are worried about Ekadasi and that are still living in Ahmedabad. They're not in Phoenix. The ones in Phoenix, I wouldn't take it seriously. See, that's the difficulty is... Sometimes some of the aspects of that the Indians in the West talk about, some of them are correct, but sometimes they're really off the wall. Because the really traditional ones that are really worried about that wouldn't be over here, you know, generally, unless there was a real economic problem. You know, so the point is I don't see what would be the problem. You just have to just see what things you can take nicely that would work. You know, like that. So, I would just saying because I've never heard it before. I've never read it. That means, I would, you know, if you're normally eating many times a day, continue that. Don't not eat. You know, don't fast, but just eat. You know, within what's there. Because you can eat other things. Like there are cultures that just eat buckwheat. For them, that's their grain, but it's considered an Ekadasi thing. Or you know, it's very healthy, and so there's so many things that you can do, you know, like that, or, you know, does that make sense? You know, milk, fruit, these things are very good for health. like that. Point is also is that they're a doctor, they're not necessarily a nutritionist. You know, because a nutritionist knows how to get what you want out of what's there. Because there's so much, like spinach has more protein than any grain or even meat, but it has to be mixed with other things to make it balance out. So I'm saying it's easy enough to get what you want, you know. And especially I find it funny that the Gujaratis are saying this because they're one of the most experts at Ekadasi food. Because they have like Navaratra, so you know everybody for you know 9-10 days they eat only Ekadasi food. So they got this huge elaborate variety of fabulous things to cook.
Yeah, for 56 bhogas on Ekadasi.
No? Yeah, yeah. So that's why I was asking. Are you sure that they weren't Sindhis, like that Gujaratis? And tell them to hand in their card.
What do you say, Sindhi? I mean, just
Sindhis. Sindhis are known for being sinful, like that. It means like back in the 70s, I remember seeing in the airport Sindhi women, you know, drinking hard alcohol and yucking it up with the guys. And this means with their families, like that. You know, other places in India, just women don't drink alcohol at all. Now maybe it's popular, but before then it was just their culture. Or it could have been Andrans, like that. Andrans are also known, because they're one of the 12 groups that are sinful. So, like that. I've never heard it, so I don't think it's probably, it's just a matter of seeing that what works for you, getting your eating properly and all that, you know, like that. I wouldn't get an anxiety about it. The point is maybe don't do a half day fast or don't not drink water, just eat regular. But it's just that you just follow the Ekadasi. Does that make sense? Like that, yeah. Okay.
Can you say something about worshipping deities in the temple and at the same time balancing those activities with, you know, preaching and study and other things, especially in a temple where there's very few devotees living in the temple, and it's difficult to take care of the deities.
How to balance between taking care of the deities and the preaching and all that. It means you have your standards in your temple, so you maintain those, and then you do whatever preaching you can around that, or have a fewer devotees take care full-time, and then others then can be freed for preaching. You know what I'm saying? So if it comes down to you only have a couple of hours and you can never really get together, do much nice in the preaching, then have a few less people do more, you know, all the puja. And then others then would be freed so they can go out and actually do some proper, you know, preaching. But at the same time as you have it means that's one thing if you're starting new, but if you're starting new, generally wouldn't have deities. But if you have deities, generally means that there's a big community out there of people who used to be in the temple and used to worship the deities. So then, you know, try to inspire them. You know, why aren't they? You know, and so in that way try to involve them.
Is it ever seen that the established worship is reduced?
Is it ever seen the established worship is reduced? Oh, the point is when you have hundreds and hundreds of devotees, why would it be acceptable? Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. I mean, if it's practical, like that, but then based on what will you reduce it? You know what I'm saying? How will you judge how to reduce it? So unless you know the deity worship, how would you? You know what I'm saying? Better that you do less numbers of time of worship and maintain your standards of who is worshiping than keep the full schedule and drop the qualification of those who worship. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like that. Because any time that there's been temples that have had less worship, you know, like they go out and preach all day, so they do the Mangal Artik and the evening Artik, and I'm not sure, I think someone would be back and cook it at noontime. But that was it. They didn't do anything else. But still the second initiated devotees. But this idea of maintain full worship and have first initiated devotees or uninitiated do the cooking and that's not a standard. You know what I'm saying?
It brings up another question. I've heard different people say, I mean, there are certainly temples where there is this situation where, you know, uninitiated people are cooking, or usually we find that they're cooking, but I've heard, I think it was Tamal Krishna Goswami said, actually it's better that you have the Brahmins cooking and uninitiated devotees doing some things on the altar, not dressing the deities, but maybe there's some things.
I've never heard that, because why they would be inside? What's their qualification? The point is it's qualification. That would be just like, like this, okay, you don't have someone to drive the car, so therefore someone without a license or underage, then they can drive. You know what I'm saying? Better to take a bus. you understand?
Yeah.
The point is generally these playing with the standards are a pastime of those who don't know a whole lot about deity worship. Generally. You know, and then the temple president will say with all audacity, no, but this is our standard, but it's not a standard at all. You know, so I'm saying you can't call it a standard, you know. You know, does that make sense? So it's like, you know, we take an old cabbage leaf and sprinkle some, you know, how you say, some sugar on it, and then say, well, this is our standard. It's not food. You know, don't try to fool us. You know. And especially, don't try, you can't maintain the standard you have. You drop the standard, and at the same time, you're planning to build a new temple that's got even bigger facilities and bigger, more elaborate things happening. You know what I'm saying? Like that. That's the point. You can't take care of one kid, don't have the second. Like that, and just say, oh, well, we'll just drop the standards. You know, we'll only take care of the kid half the time. That way, then we can take care of both kids. You know what I'm saying? We won't do, in other words, we don't drop the standards in our own life. You know what I'm saying?
Not exactly.
Devotees aren't working part time, living in a smaller place, you know, so that they can do service at the temple. No, they just live their life, and if they have no time for the temple, that's just the way it is. So, therefore, how can they make these statements that therefore will drop Krishna's quality of life? You know what I'm saying? So you have to be very, very careful about this. You have to be practical. But then you're saying is that if a temple is dropping its standard, then that's all the better it can do. So by dropping it, then what are they doing to improve it? If it's just like, oh, this is the way it is, and that's what we got to live with, or it's a matter of, you know, we're going to preach and correct it. You know what I'm saying? Or if they simplify the standard, then it's a matter of then they're going to put more into preaching. Because the idea is we preach, then deity worship is to help in that. But the point is it's not that we reduce the puja and we don't increase the preaching. That would be, then what's the meaning? Why is it a temple? You know? Is that okay?
Is there such a thing as historic or local standard? Let's say this book was written not in the very beginning of the movement, and there were other Krishna deities like here installed much longer than this book existed. I mean, this book was written. Pancharatra Pradipa, I mean. So deity worship was done according to what Prabhupada told, some senior devotee told.
Yeah, okay.
And then they say, well, the book came out, and then, well, it's not in accordance with what we have been doing up until now, so it can be changed. Like senior devotees, of course, they attach to how things done, like how many circles you offer, who you offer.
But how many circles is not the problem. The problem is that are you worshipping Krishna by approach to going through the spiritual master? Because that's what Prabhupada gave. Prabhupada's artik was, you go through the spiritual master and the acharyas, then you worship Krishna, then you come back down. So if they don't have that, then they shouldn't claim that that's what they have. Then they shouldn't claim that our standard is older and it's given by Prabhupada, because it's not. You know what I'm saying?
No, I said this is as an example, but I don't remember exactly, but if there are any other differences between...
Those are details.
So
you know, this temple cooks, you know, 3 sabjis, that temple cooks 2 sabjis, that one cooks 4 sabjis. That's not the problem. The point is sabjis are being cooked. You know? Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So this is just to be standard. Plus, you have to also remember that why was the Pancharatra Pradeep, even the idea came up? Why was it expected that it should be created? Srila Prabhupada asked it to be written. Does that make sense? So then if he establishes something, say a standard book should be written, and then the book is written, then you don't say, well, Prabhupada did it this way. Prabhupada started it that way, then expected, you know, a book that would standardize things and make things so everyone understands nicely. He even had it that part of the Bhakti Shastri was studying this deity worship book. If you wanted to get Bhakti Shastri, you had to study this book also. Right? So it was also one of the things. He called it Archan Padati. So the original book was called Archan Padati. Then when they took that and revised it, then it came out as Pancharatra Pradeep. Does that make sense like that? So you have to look. If Prabhupada came and specifically did some certain things there, and so therefore out of that, you know, appreciation for that particular thing is kept, that's fine. It works. But then other things then you have to see is, you know, can they be, you know, developed or refined or improved, or, you know what I'm saying? So that, you know, that makes a uniqueness for that particular temple. Is that okay?
Yeah.
Okay.
Also, a little bit in relation to what you were saying, preaching versus worship. I know one person who was giving seminars in Europe, that's where I'm from, in the temples. He was saying things like, well, preaching is so important, although he is a pujari, full-time pujari all the time, but he would say, well, if I do arati and nobody else is around, like some guest comes in, I feel comfortable.
No, the rule is you have to stop the arati and go take care of it. It doesn't mean that you're not going to finish your worship or take care of the deity. It's not that, oh, we stop worshiping the deity and taking care.
Yeah.
Point is the temple is meant as a center for these things, like that. That's why it was... Prabhupada had these standards of how many people, how much regular, and everything like that. So then you would establish worship, right? Because then you would keep the preaching in the forefront. Somehow or another, in the 80s, it became very popular. It was the sign of a good presidency that you had a temple that had 3 altars. The Prabhupada had 3 altars in like Vrindavan, Bombay, you know. But you know, New York only had 1. LA had 3. You know, London had 2, but you had to have 3 altars and this and that, and then they establish all that, but they don't have the people to take care. So it was more of a prestige element rather than actual understanding. Does that make sense? But the point is Krishna's been invited, so then we need to take care. It's not that devotees aren't there. So the point is, it's not, oh, no one's around, we can't worship. Then that means, well, then where's your preaching? If you say preaching is more important, then go out and do it. Why is it that so many hundreds of devotees in the yatra aren't taking part? You know what I'm saying? There must be a reason. So then find that out, correct it.
I just meant this as an exception of, and also as an attitude, you know, in that, during this situation.
But that's the attitude of a pujari. That's not of a manager who knows nothing about puja and is just trying to find an easy way out. You know what I'm saying? Pujari is he's doing the worship and some, you know, guest or somebody comes and there's no one else, he takes care of the guests because they're Krishna's guests. So Krishna wouldn't want to sit there and be worshipped while his guests are neglected. Right? His guests, you know, so therefore you take care of Krishna's guests. When that's finished, then you go back and finish the worship. Prabhupada makes that very clear. That's normal. You know, but if it's in a temple situation like this, you could have someone else around to take care of guests if they regularly come in. But that person you're talking about there was probably on a farm out in the middle of nowhere, where generally no one ever did show up, so it wouldn't be a problem. So if someone did, then they just stop and take care of them. Does that make sense?
Also another situation, let's say you giving lecture or somebody else is giving lecture and then ringing bells, blowing conch shells again. I remember it was also told that you shouldn't do those things when the lecture is going on because this is part of worship too. And
yeah, it's kirtan.
You know, so I see pujari sometimes being confused, like, well, it's worship, but it's part of processing. I have to ring at least a little bit or blow a little bit.
So then the thing is if they want, if they have to ring a bell, do they have to ring a big bell? Why can't they get a little dinky bell? You know, they make these little sliver bells about this big. You know what I'm saying? So that's the whole point. You want to maintain a certain thing, find a way to do it. That's a symptom of intelligence. If it's just, no, we have to do it this way, then that's generally more sentiment.
What's that? It would be normal not to ring a bell, I think. Also.
The point is what does the bell do? Why do we ring a bell? So can the pujari explain why the bell is rung? Right? In the bell, all music is present. So the point is when the worship goes on, there must be kirtan. Right? So if there's no kirtan, then you ring the bell. Right? Does that make sense? So that way, kirtan's always happening when the worship's going on. Right? So if you're doing that kirtan and they're out here, madangas and kartals, then there's more kirtan. It's just there's kirtan plus more kirtan. Right? But if you're glorifying the Lord, you're giving a class, and they're ringing a bell so that no one can hear it, then how is that service? You know what I'm saying? So they don't even know, they know they have to ring the bell, but they have no idea why they're ringing the bell. Right? The conch then removes all inauspiciousness in that. If a lecture is going on, that's already going on. So there's no need. Right? These are mediums for showing one's devotion. But they're part of it. The main thing is your lamp or whatever, their boga or whatever it else is that you're doing at the time. Is that okay?
Yeah.
So in other words, maturity is required. Not expediency, you know, or ritualism. So that's generally your problem is the, you know, the pragmatic minimalist and the you know, how you say, ritualistic, you know, religionist. And they sit there and fight like cats and dogs. But they both basically miss the point. You know. Is that okay?
Yeah.
Okay. Something else? Yes.
I have a question about the offerings on the altar. As far as I remember, like for the last 30 years, the Golga plate for Vaini Thai had like three porries and three sweets. And for Radhakrishna and Radhagopalava had two. And then for Jagannath, four. And then for two. And then for Jagannath Balaji, the Mahasivagra, I had three each. And recently it's been changed. They have taken away the third one for Gorni Thai. And my understanding was that it was for the Guru and that it should be there. So somebody explained something I couldn't even understand why it wasn't there, but I wonder if you could explain.
I wouldn't have any idea why they would have taken it away. It means if it's a standard, that's the way it's been.
Yes,
always
yes.
The best thing is these things are written down.
Yeah.
so that whatever it is, the pujaris, they know what the standard is.
The temple president called it an erroneous historical practice.
But the thing is, but then there has to be a reason why that would be there. Yeah, it's just a matter of...
There is a reason.
Yeah, but then it would...
The pujaris know what it is.
Yeah, but if the point is it was for Gornitai and the spiritual master and went for Prabhupada, then that's not a problem because Prabhupada's still there. You know, you could even consider, say, yeah, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, it was erroneous because they only offered three, they should have put four. Mm. You know what I'm saying? But so they just have to... Basically, it's if there's nothing wrong in the old standard, then there's no need to change. If there was something, actually, there was some misunderstanding.
Well, there was,
you know what I'm saying? It's just like you have the some of them use the thing and they use the riyam rum tum on it, and so then they sprinkle water. It's supposed to be prokshana, which means a super light sprinkling of water. It means you put something on the hand, it goes out through the ends of the finger. That's what makes it a prokshana. It's not a dribbling. Prokshana means this goes on here, and then when you throw it like that, it becomes a super fine spray of water. Someone will take the conch directly and sprinkle it on everything. So you have, you know, your sandesh sitting in there and an eighth of an inch of water and stuff. That's an erroneous practice. That they're using that ritual, that's not a problem. But how they're applying it, that's so that you could correct even if they've been doing it for 30 years. So then, but these are things then you have to, you know, the pujaris who know and then sit down and then work it out. Because it's not a political point. It's just a matter of working it out and just seeing so that, you know, it's satisfied whatever it is. And then whatever is the standard should be written so that as pujaris adjust and change that the standard remains the same.
Have just one senior pujari rewrite or write. We have no deity manual. Write the deity manual with the under. You know, I had the books, the old books, the white one, the original.
Mm-hmm. But that's what the Pancharatra Pradeep was there to adjust those, because sometimes certain things would be super technical and other things would be super simple. There wasn't a consistency in the level of it. So that's why then it was redone. Like you have these super elaborate thing for installing the asana that you sit on with Vedic mantras, but then something else has no mantras at all, that it technically is just as elaborate. So it's just that the person who made it liked this thing and didn't know about that thing, or, you know, that kind of thing. So it was Pancharatra Pradeep was to make a consistency. So if you want to run at that depth, then everything is to that technical. And if you want to run at a simpler, then everything is that simple, rather than just you pick and choose that, well, I like more mantras, so this or this or that, or each individual pujari adding their own, you know, preference and then changing the worship. So... But you always have to remember is that in the deity worship that you have, it's always a combination of the authorities that take care of the deity. So that means, in our situation, would mean your head pujari and your temple president, because the temple president is also taking responsibility for seeing that, you know, the manpower and money and that is there. So whenever they do these big... big programs, like there's one, yeah, anything where there's representative as like a special think something for the deities, like reports or where they're begging for forgiveness or any offenses that are committed over the year or anything, it always involves the leading pujaris and the leading administrators, you know, anybody who's connected, or if there's an acharya, then them, they all have to be involved. So it's not that it's, you know, one against the other. It has to be a combination, because if there's not a cooperation, then that's not also so good.
Well, it seemed like there was a lot of cooperation until the committee vetoed it.
Yeah, but the point is the committee has to understand what is the process of worship and the process of responsibility.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So then, like that, then you have to work it out. But it has to be... It's not a political thing. It can't be that, you know, someone's on the committee, so therefore, you know, that's all, you know, they say, what they say is it and everybody else, it doesn't matter, or someone who's not on the committee, then they have to, you know, it's a matter of working something out that works. There has to be a cooperation, there has to be maturity. Is that okay?
Because
everybody who made these standards, none of their mothers were Indian. Right? So therefore, in the morning when they got up, they got one piece of toast, or they got two pieces of toast, and that was it. If they had an Indian mom, then they would just pile it up, that's all. Say again? Means, it's in other words, if you say there's going to be four puris there, then you know that there's not going to be three. That's the problem.
Is that important or not? So I still don't get from your answers. I mean,
see, the whole point is like this. I'm not going to be used as the point on the spearhead for anybody's politics here in this temple.
I understand.
I'm talking Pancharatra. I'm not talking politics and who's in charge and who's on a power trip.
Okay.
So therefore, it's a matter of, you know, understanding what are the principles of deity worship, and then in a mature set of state of mind, working it out, not who's in charge, who's bigger, who's fatter, who's stinkier, you know, like that. It's a matter of, you know, we're talking about the deity here. So the point is what's wrong if there's a suite for the spiritual master? It's not a big deal, you know, unless they can explain philosophically why it's not needed. Well, after going to eat, he gets it anyway, so he ends up with two anyway. But then, if there were three, he gets three. You know, so you want your spiritual master to get less, or what it is, or, you know what I'm saying? There has to be some reason. It has to be clear, and the devotees are satisfied.
But she was saying that supposedly it shouldn't matter. I mean, you can put, you know, one pujara likes to put more, he can put more. Isn't
but you can put more than what the thing is, but you can't put less. So the point is it's there, it can be more. It's not that it has to be this. So that, this is the difficulty when you ritualize something like washing your feet after going to the bathroom. That, you know, just it just doesn't soak in, you know. But something like, you know, fighting over until the death over, you know, it's two puris or three, you know, that will go on, you know. Probably gives the example of those two people fighting over something. And one was saying it's two, and the other one was saying it's something else. And so the fighting got so pitched that the one person took the other and threw him into the river. And he can't swim. So as he was drowning, then just before he drowned, he stuck his hand out of the water and went, two. So Prabhupada's already made that point. Is that the point is it's like this. The mother wants to see him eat as much as possible, so however many puris you can get on that plate, that's how many she's going to put, because she wants to cook that many. But most cooks just go in, and you have to cook four puris, they're only going to do four puris. In fact, if it was two puris, they'd be happier. You know what I'm saying? So that's why I made the comment, is their mom wasn't an Indian mom. Otherwise, it's how much they can stuff into your face, all the better. You know? Does that make sense? So the point is that you put a nice amount. You know, in other words, how much someone would eat, that's what you're putting. You know what I'm saying? So that would be the normal thing. Also, it also depends upon what size your puris are. You understand? Oh yeah, get out there. This puri is 1 millimeter smaller. I'm sorry, Prabhu, this is 2 millimeters too big, this puri. Get out there. No, Bodo, but that's only on this side. See, it's a little bump here. Okay, get out. Cut it off. Okay. So it's like, you know. It's like this also. Most of the time we cook big puris, which are like Bengali puris or some of these others. They're big. You know, so therefore you would put less of those. You know, possibly Mataji was making the comment as Gujarati. They never make a puri bigger than that. So for them, two puris is nothing. You know? You know what I'm saying? But if the puris are that big, that's equal to like eight of the Gujarati puris. So then she might be happy. Okay, then there's getting enough. Eight puris is enough. You know what I'm saying? So that's also going to be a thing. You have to see what that means when you say one sweet. What is the size of that sweet? You know, so if it's a big, like this big, like that. So, okay, where is it? I think it's a Nathdwar. The ladus are that big. You know. So all other places they'll be smaller. So you'd have to also judge. Point is how much a normal adult would eat. That should be on your plate. That's the thing, you know. Regular size, regular. I think before at one time, because Radha Krishna were very small, so they make them little dinky puris and little dinky everything. And Tata said, no, you offer a normal plate, the full amount how a person would eat. Does that make sense?
So can I assume that, for example, if it's not in Pancharatra Pradipa, it could simply be determined by the local authorities?
That's right. But they have to understand the principles on which they're judging. In other words, you're feeding a person. How much would the person eat? You know, don't give Krishna two puris and you're eating six. Right? If those puris, no one can eat more than two of them, then you give two. You know what I'm saying? If that's a standard, you know, except for Bhakta Jose, of course, he eats 20, but that's another thing. You know, we're talking about, you know, most devotees. So if two puris is a normal adult amount, then that's what you give. If it would be four, you give that. But it could be going on the principle, I can see another angle, and unfortunately in support of the temple president here, on the numbers. You'd never give odd numbers. In the way three. You can give five, but you never give three. You can give two or four. But three is for enemies. So if that's the consideration, then three would be wrong. Then if you want the spiritual master to get, since there's two spiritual masters sitting there, increase it to four. So it's either you reduce it down to two or take it up to there, but three would be incorrect anyway. Like if you put, in other words, if it's something loose, you don't worry about it. But if it's in pieces, like you won't give three pakuras, it'll be two or four. You know, or sweets, it's two or four, it won't be three. Does that make sense?
Yeah.